Well, it's I've been asked to introduce Dr. Felician, but you know, I'm going to call you by your first name because we're informal here. Bitupu Mufuda?
Yeah.
Bitupu Mufuda is from the Congo. We just had a short conversation. We've never met before. He's a former Roman Catholic priest. Lived in the Congo and has been in Edmonton. I'm not sure how long.
Oh, 15 years.
15 years. He's been married for 20. I'm not sure if he's been married 20. But I know that he has six children. Yeah, three boys and three girls. And he's very much involved with the Francophone community, particularly immigrants in Alberta. In fact, he's just been elected president of their organization. And he became, as it says in your program guide, he became interested in Thomas Merton, particularly in relation to the devastation that took place in his country, in Congo. His doctoral work is on African oral literature, and he did that at Laval University in Quebec. His first language is French. Does anyone speak French here? Yay, okay. He speaks English too.
And
we're from Alberta, some of us. And he's Mitupa Mufuta is program worker for Catholic Social Services in Edmonton. So I'm really delighted that you're here, and thank you so much. And I'm going to be sort of the timekeeper, and we'll make sure that we have time for questions and dialogue after your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My friend, in humanity, you are my brothers and sisters in humanity and also in faith. That is a big richness. Can you imagine that? And I am very happy to be among you. My English is not very good, but if I made mistakes or if I have a problem, I will ask you, I will translate it in French. Maybe you will find the best word to express well what I wanted to say. I wrote something. What I wrote is what I think for me, Merton's vision of God, of our faith. And in sharing that with you, I put parallelism between what I found in Merton's life and what we have in our African vision of life. As I told to my sister here, I was a Catholic priest, and during my education, I loved two writers. The first was Saint Thérèse de l'Enfant Jésus, what we called Little Teresa, and Merton. And those people, the two people, influenced my life. The first, she showed me how everything in life is so great when you are simple. And when you approach God, you discover that simplicity is the richness of life. The second is Merton. Merton provoked in me what I call the revolt of war. Because when I read him, I was in grade at this time in secondary level. I said, why people are fighting? Why do we have war in the world? Because at this time we were learning Western history, and as you know, one moment in Europe they had what they call La Guerre de Cent Ans. That means at certain time they had war during 1 century. And I was wondering why people were fighting or are fighting. And at the end of my grade in the Congo, in missionary countries, people would like to become priests. They finish the secondary level. After secondary level, they do 3 years of philosophy. After 3 years of philosophy, they do 4 years of theology. And after 4 years, they have 1 year of probation. And after that, they are ordained priest. And at the end of my grade, my philosophy step, we were obligated to write something, to choose a topic about something. And I selected war as human phenomenon. And you can't imagine, Martin was behind that, but I didn't work on Martin. And in learning that, I found that people are making war because they eat, because they drink, and also because they talk. Three things. And I said, when I discovered that, and I discovered that it was not only human beings who are fighting. War is also among animals, insects. And we'll find that, you will find those three things. They eat, they drink, and they talk. You think that insects don't talk, but they talk. So, I come back to my presentation. My presentation will be a dialogue with you. Merton believed in God. And when you believe in God, you have faith. And faith is a product of grace. You can believe because your parents were Christian. But when you are baptized, when you become Christian, you receive grace. Grace is something on which you don't have any control. You received as a gift. And for Merton, human beings are directed to sanctification. And in the process to be sanctified, we have 4 steps. Faith in God. Conversion, to become a new man, a new woman. Mystical level of life, which is personal experience. And our community life in a church with others, where we are obligated to fight, to work together to attain our sanctification. Now, I don't like to describe those things. You know them. What I would like to do now is how we African people, we can find some connection, some links with this vision of Martin, which is finally Christian vision of life. When we are talking about African people, in your mind, you have different pictures. For some of you, Africa can be reduced to some stories that you learned when you were young. For others, Africa is a dark continent where until now you can't understand what is happening there. For others, Africa is a rich continent, but with foolish people. Never they make progress. They are fighting every day. For others, Africa is small children with big stomach. They don't eat. They don't drink. They are every day begging help and money. Maybe some of you, you are sending every day 20, 30, 40, $100 to support those children, girls or boys. But what do you know really about African vision of life? Do you think that African people have a vision of life? I don't know. Maybe some scholars were interested in theology. They wrote something about African vision of life. Any theologian who are not well educated can't imagine that African people have their own theology. Because if I ask them a question, I say, tell me, when you came with your God, how did we understood that we can be saved? What means be saved, redeemed? What does we speak? We're speaking our languages. You came with French or with English. How did we convert to your notion or your vision of God, of grace, of those things? If primarily we didn't have some links with God, if God didn't mean anything to us, how could we believe you? How? If you come and you say, that is my children, I have experience to have child, to have a woman, to have children. But if you say, you come and you say, that is my children, if I have any experience, I can't understand what you mean. But if you came and you said God, and you translated God in our language, and it happened like that, you translated God in our language, and we didn't take God or Dieu, we translate his word in my language, which is first life, Vidi Mukulu. And you were talking about God. I am talking about my Vidi Mukulu, and you were saying the same thing. Imagine. We're saying the same thing. For me, it was the first life. For you, I don't know what it was when you said God. And when we were saying, Dieu in your language, I know from my education that Dieu came from Zeus. It is like that. And so you see, when you came, we had our vision of life. My friend, our vision are founded in some what I call the basic our foundations for African people is we came late in this world. We didn't start with word. We didn't we have not been created before word. When we were born, we found word already there. So we are late coming in this word. And in discovering that, we understood that someone was first of us. And we call him God. We gave him different names. And when you are young, we have our organization of our society. Children are initiated, boys and girls, to discover the first reality of our life, who is God. God is first. And in Africa, God is not necessarily man. In all tribes, in some tribes, God is woman. And we do not have one God. It is not necessary to have one. The important thing is to know that He is the first one and the important one. Now, don't start fighting against me, because you will say he is not sharing our faith. War starts from there. I told you. I said war starts because people are eating, drinking, and talking. And when they talk, they don't understand each other, and war starts. So, if they say, we believe in one God, others say, we have two. Others say, we have four. They start fighting. If we have one, you are stronger, okay. You dominate others, and you invite them to believe in yours. And if we believe that with four, we are four stronger than you, we impose you our four gods. So, my friend, the first foundation is God. The second foundation in our culture is the fact that all African people, black African people, believe that they are part of the world. The world, they are intelligent. They are different skills to realize their destiny, but they believe that they are part of the world. That is the reason why they can talk to God, to trees, to everything. And when we were doing that, Western people came and said, oh, they are animists. Okay, we are animists. And now with the sciences, they are discovering things which exactly can explain this animism. We are part of the world. Tomorrow you will take pork, they will take the body of pork, they will put it in your body. Nobody will say, it is animism. If they discover tomorrow that a fish can heal you, they will take fish, they put it in your eyes, will start seeing exactly, and nobody will say it is animism. So you can see how our intelligence is so limited. And because we don't believe in our limits, we can have war. Those who know more, they can impose their vision of life. They can manipulate others. I can give you an example. There are people who say abortion is normal. I don't take position for that. But I say, I would like to explain to you how people are fighting, how people have war. War is not necessarily where you have military people, soldiers, who are killing innocent people. War, I told you, is starting in drinking, in eating, and in talking. Now, the third foundation in our African traditions is solidarity. Solidarity is belief in the fact that when you are alone, you are dead. You need solidarity. You need, even if God, He didn't give you an eye. He gave you two eyes. He gave you two arms, two legs. Why? He was able to give you an eye. Only one eye. Why did He give you two eyes, two legs, two arms and two hands? Because He wanted to teach us that we need solidarity. When you are single, you are dead. And if we have war, it is also because people are fighting for themselves. They became selfish. They would like to have everything. I give you an example. My president was in power for 32 years, Mobutu. He took everything for himself. He was the most rich president in the world. When he died, only three people were with him. They put him in the grave. Three people put him in the grave. But he stole everything in our country. And because of that, Congo is suffering. Until now. Because he was selfish. He didn't think that becoming president is a responsibility for everybody. He is selected by people, by God, to help others. And the last foundation in our vision of life is life and death. We don't believe that death is the end of life. Death is the beginning of life. We are between two limits, life and death. And life is like this. You start in the morning, noon, and the end at evening time, and in midnight, you say that you are dead. But in all African countries, cultures, life, and that is the reason why when someone dies, you find African people are dancing, and you find them stupid. You say, how do they dance like that? And 5 minutes after, they cry, or they start crying, and after they are dancing, you find them stupid. And when I come here, my first experience, I visited, how do you call that, funerarium? Mm-hmm. And I found the people were talking. They didn't talk, and I found the dead person with glasses. I said, why did they put glasses in his eyes? I didn't say anything because in my culture they taught me that when if you go in a new culture, don't be careful. So when I found the dead person with glasses in his eyes, I was very surprised. I said, does he continue to see? But I didn't ask question by respect for the dead person because we respected them. And at the end, I asked my colleague was my dean, and he said, "Oh, it was to give him his look, because when he was alive, people recognized him with his glasses. Now he is dead, so if they move his glasses, they won't recognize him." And I said, "Do they believe in the resurrection?" And he said, "Maybe, I said, but they should, it is not necessary at this time to keep, because he is dead. And so you see, we don't believe that death is the end of life. Now, I will stop. I will make a synthesis between what I described before, between Merton's vision, which is Christian vision of life. And I tried to show you how this vision can be found in our African vision. And when you look at in what I described, you will see that human beings, we are the same. And as I told you, people are fighting, people have war because they drink, they eat, and they talk. And if you push so far your analysis, you will see that effectively in our world we have war because people talk, drink, and eat. Now, I don't have time to describe those things. But if I have a comment, my final comment, I saw the announcement of this conference. By chance, I was there. I checked. I said, oh, I have to go there. And I said, maybe if I go there, I share with them my African experience. They will learn something from African people. My friend, Congo is in war since we became independent. 47 years. Someone asked me a question. I said, why are they fighting? Why so many African countries are in war? There are three reasons. Because African people eat, African people drink, after African people talk. Second reason, Africa is in war because since Africa was colonized, they lost their vision. When white people came in Africa, our ancestors, through dreams, told us, your brothers are coming. Be happy. Welcome them. And when they came, we showed them everything that we had. But we didn't know that in our soil, we had diamonds, gold, those things that people coming from north needed. When they discovered that, they tried to get it for themselves. Sometimes when I would like to make laughing people, I say, why do you say that people who are at north side are rich? Why do you say that white are rich and others are poor? When I was young, never. Our doors are open every day. It was like native people here. If you go to Africa, you will be very surprised. You will find, if you go in Congo, it is a green country. You find everything. You don't need to work so much to have food. You find different kinds of food. You find different kinds of mushrooms. You find everything. So people were not obligated to work so hard to have things. You have things which are canned. You put them in what do you call that? Conserve, means that?
Preserve,
exactly. But there, they have natural things. It could be possible to send to you every day fresh things from south. They don't do that. So, what I would like to tell you is, everybody we have a mission as a Christian, as a human beings. Where you are, I have an experience from a boy who asked to his parents, my parents, tell me, why did we have second war? And when did it start? Tell me, which day? She asked her mother. Her mother said, oh, it started in 1918. And his father said, no, it was not 15 October. And the child was there. After 15 minutes, the parents were fighting because they couldn't say which day Second War started. So, as I told you, we are responsible for our world. With your institute, what you are doing now, Merton, I think people start to know him. Maybe they do not have access to his vision of faith, of love, and I think, as African, when you met anybody, when you met everyone in your road, if in your mind you think that this person is a part of yourself, your behavior will change. You will do something better for him or for her. So I stop. I thank you for your attention. I tried to share what I thought was for me very important from African vision of life. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Maybe we can have some conversation now around that. I was thinking of particularly of Merton's sort of realization that he's one with humanity. He had that epiphany many times, and you know, I don't know if any of you know Merton well enough to know about his experience at Forth and Wallace, where he, you know, as Don said earlier, Merton entered the monastery thinking he was leaving the world, and he had this moment in the early 60s, well, actually, I think it was 59, 60. He was in Louisville for some reason, for medical appointment, I think, and there he was, standing at the corner of Walnut and Forth in Louisville, and lots of people back and forth, and right in the heart of Louisville. Different nationalities, different ages, very multicultural. And suddenly, he said it was like his vision became clear. It was like the scales dropped away from his eyes, that he realized that there was nothing terribly special about himself, that he was part of them and they were part of him. And so I connected that with one of the things you said in terms of the African culture, particularly about the interconnectedness of humanity. And I'm sure we've experienced that in whatever your faith traditions are. And certainly in our culture, more and more we are learning from First Nations people about the interconnectedness of creation. And our theology is getting big and wide and cosmological in nature, as in, you know, Christ of the cosmos. And so there's some sort of energy happening here from from your continent to ours. I can see that connection. Can anyone else say anything about other connections they've seen in terms of talk?
I was just thinking about Merton's exploration of other traditions, and towards the end of his life, how interested he became in Asian spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember him giving the same attention to African spirituality.
No, he didn't.
And I don't know if I'm correct on that.
You are right. That is the one of the reasons why I wanted to come here. But he didn't have a chance maybe at this time. Because, as I told it to someone, we believe in a theology that God revealed those things once. I don't believe in that. I believe that every day
God continued to talk to us. God continued to reveal it, to reveal us things today. When we leave this place, you will remember me. You will have inspiration for different things. And for those who never listen to an African preacher or someone like me, if you have a chance again, you will say, oh, I can go there, I will learn something. It is very important. I am African because you say I am black, even if I talk to someone, am I really black? He said, oh, not really. As I said to people, are you white like snow? They say, no. But who are we? We don't know. We are so limited that we can't describe our color. But because we are limited by language, and we say, you are black. And black themselves, among themselves, they will say, he is more dark. He is a little bit light. And if you are living with them for a long time, you will discover that. People from Ghana, from Sudan, they don't have my color. They are different. People from Ethiopia, they are totally different. Pygmies, they are pygmies who are more light than myself. And those kind of beings, we are the same. Mm-hmm. But God is so rich that, and in his case, I think at this time, where he was living, we had the Vietnamese war, different things, and maybe in his experience, what I tried to understand is, at this time, did he live in the same time with Luther Martin King? Luther Martin King came late.
Martin Luther, no, they. It was the same time period.
Exactly.
Martin Luther King, I think, was assassinated in 1968?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I discovered in his works, he read something in a geographic magazine.
Who did?
Martin.
Martin.
And he did excellent comments about Africa. I saw something like that.
Well, Merton was very involved, of course, by the 60s,
yeah.
Racial issues.
Exactly.
In the South. In fact, he's written, his poetry is written about Birmingham, the killing of the children in Birmingham,
mm-hmm.
And there's a song cycle that someone has written from that time period. I can't remember the name of it now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Merton was very much aware of
mm-hmm.
his black brothers and sisters,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure, even though we didn't, to my knowledge, I don't think he's written anything
about
Africa. But I mean,
he was open to that.
He certainly spoke French.
Yeah,
he
was speaking
He spoke French. He was interested in racial issues, and I really do think, had he lived, he would have landed on Africa at some point.
Yeah.
And then you don't know.
He was an open mind. He was really an open mind.
Yeah.
He was walking through his mind, through his faith. He was open to everybody.
Well,
what
I
saw.
Sorry.
Well, I wanted to say one of my connections with Africa is some time spent in Uganda in June of 1994.
Okay.
In the southwestern part of the country there.
Okay.
And it's been on my mind for a long time, the terrible violence that took place
exactly.
in Rwanda.
Exactly.
You know, and talk about the root of war and violence being fear.
Yeah.
That was so obviously the root and the way that the violence there was hyped up
exactly.
all along the line
was
fear of your neighbor and
exactly.
what they're going to do to you.
Exactly.
And, you know, Merton has this vision that we've been talking about reconciliation and,
exactly.
and peace
mm-hmm.
and nonviolent
exactly.
ways. And one of the things that Rwanda is kind of my stumbling block to embracing that vision of peace.
Exactly.
Because as far as my understanding, the situation right now is the what brought that violence to an end was a counter force of a disciplined fighting force of Rwandan expatriates coming back from Uganda into the country.
Exactly.
Who are willing to fight and shoot and kill.
Exactly.
In order to establish again a peace.
Exactly.
And so, you know, I wonder how does Merton and a vision of peace interact with that situation, and maybe what are our resources in African spirituality are brought to bear.
I wanted to tell you one thing. Fear, in our education, they said, if you die, you go in hell, right? You are afraid to go in hell.
Who says that? I'm sorry.
In hell.
Excuse me. My pronunciation. Yes. I don't, but okay.
In the Catholic Church, we were taught that if you are not reconciliated with God and you are a sinner, you die, your place will be hell.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And fear of hell helped you to be a nice person. Right? Huh? You understand? And in Africa, when you kill someone, they teach us that his spirit will disturb yours.
As a spirit what?
His spirit. Because we believe that in our body, we have body and the spirit. So.
The spirit of the person
the spirit
will disturb you.
Yeah.
Will disturb you.
Yeah, that will disturb you all your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you kill someone, they have so many rituals to correct that. And in African vision, if maybe I lie, researchers can do that, you will find that before 15 centuries, they never found big fault. I'm talking about Africa, Central Africa. Africa was attacked by Arabic, by North, for a long time. But if you look at Negro-African area, you didn't find big fighting, a nation. We have, take my country, we have 200 languages. And the languages were one of the ways to avoid conflict. Because if I am speaking your language, tomorrow you show me that you have more power, I leave, I immigrate, I leave my place, and I go somewhere. For example, I take 200 kilometers, I go there. And when I arrive there, I change language. When you come back again to dominate me, we can't communicate, so you leave me. And with 200 languages, people were living in peace. But to come to your comments, those people were living for centuries together.
Mm-hmm.
They were not Tutsi or Hutu, as they said.
Mm-hmm.
They were same people,
mm-hmm.
with king, with
never Belgians
exactly.
That.
And when Belgium came, they create those things.
Yep.
So they gave privileges to other people. Don't forget, I told you, they talk,
mm-hmm.
they eat, and they drink.
Mm-hmm.
And because you drink, you like to get more. Because you eat, you like to get more for yourself. And in talking, you are manipulating others. You are lying. That is the reason why wise people don't talk a lot. That is the reason why you find all the people, they are sitting, they don't talk. They are talking to themselves. So in your case, there are two things. At this time, they are trying to say, hey, guys, you were married to each other, Tutsi and Hutu. Why do you kill each other? Think to that. Because in African traditions, if I come to your tribe, I take women, you come to my tribe, you take women, we exchange women, we can't fight. Because our blood should be protected. They don't follow those things today. They follow military power, they follow money power. Those things do not help. And they don't know, they don't follow anymore African traditions. They are forgotten, they are following what they call modernism.
You know, just to follow up, I guess another situation comes to mind is in northern Uganda.
Yeah.
Right now, there is the possibility of peace between the LRA
and the government.
And it's interesting that the Belgian court, the European Court of International Criminal Court, ICC, in some ways an obstacle to peace happening there. Because maybe it is it's an outsider's version of justice.
Exactly.
That is being imposed there. But the people of northern Uganda, I'm so impressed, or I find it very hard to understand, as not an African, I guess, that they are willing to
stop war.
Even the leaders of the, even the top leaders of the LRA.
Okay.
They're willing to give them peace. They're finding maybe African ways to,
exactly,
to have a,
yeah,
come to some kind of reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And it's the maybe the well-intentioned external force that is
exactly
an obstacle.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard an interview fairly recently about that same situation where the European, primarily the North Americans and the Europeans, are saying justice needs to be done, and we have a court to bring justice. So Cohen and the other leaders of the Lord's Resistance Army need to be brought to The Hague, where they can go through a process and be found guilty or innocent or punished. And yet, in this particular segment, there were people who were actually living in the camps,
mm-hmm,
were saying, "We want peace. We don't want punishment." And another one said, "How, I don't understand how punishment will bring about peace and reconciliation." And even Cohen was a member of a family and a tribe, and he should be brought back and included in that family again. I think that here you have a huge divergence here.
Exactly.
And I think that Merton actually came, he addressed that, not in terms of the African context, but certainly in terms of his emphasis in reconciliation rather than retribution.
Exactly.
And so maybe you can comment a little more on how that works. And obviously, the very divergent paths of the North American. Justice needs to be done, and justice means retribution and punishment and all of that, and other visions of, yeah.
Yeah, the problem is, you know, when Belgium came in Congo, they had two kinds of laws. They had Western laws and African laws. And when they went to the court, if they couldn't find solution to their Western laws, they called the senior people, old people, who came at the court and said, according to our traditional laws, look at what we did. If we take in Congo, my tribe, we have Luba people. And among Luba people, you have Baluba and you have Lulua. But Belgium put the two groups in conflict. For example, they came to an area and said, oh, Baluba are preparing war against you. They go there and they said to other people, oh, Lulua are preparing war against you. So people were fighting without knowing why. Now, chiefs decided. They said, we are the same people, like they were brothers in the past years. Some people stayed at north and the Lulua came at south. So they said, in our cultures, we have rituals to stop those things. And in '60, they did rituals and said, never, never we will fight. If there is a problem, we have to solve it according to our traditions. And never it happened among them. So the problem is, we don't know people who are, if you take international community, they don't know those things. They don't follow those things. They say, oh, that is primitive things. They don't follow that. It is a way to combine the both system to solve the problem. If someone is, how do you call them, warlords?
Warlords.
Exactly. Those people, they kill, they provoke war because they would like to get diamonds, iron, where they are. For those people, the only way to stop war is to arrest them. So Western system should work, because in our traditional way, we don't have a way to stop them, to arrest them. But for internal conflict among tribes, it is possible to follow traditional ways, and people can find solution easily. It takes time, but sometimes international community does not have time to follow African ways to solve conflict. That is my comment.
I just wanted to make a couple comments. I don't know very much about Merton, but my understanding is that towards the end of his life, he was going deeply into Sufism. And clearly, I think, as you said, he would probably have gone on into African types of religious or spiritual experience. The path that I'm on, and I'm sure many of us here who are on, is on a similar path, and if you're interested in Merton, I'm sure that most of you must be on the same path. But that is that we discover, as Merton discovered, that there is no one right way, one right spiritual path. All paths lead to God. But in the meantime, of course, we have a situation where the world hasn't recognized this, hasn't recognized that we are all one. And so we cut off our nose to spite our face. The only way that's going to change, of course, is as we raise the consciousness levels of humanity itself. But in the meantime, we have to deal with the problem, as you're indicating, in Africa. As mentioned this morning, in the BNA Act of Canada, the government's duty is peace, order, and good government.
Exactly.
You have to have peace and you have to have order.
Exactly.
So I was just discussing with a couple of people during the break. I'm a pacifist. I used to be in the military. I was trained to shoot down Russians, but I didn't have to. But as I've gotten older, I've recognized that peace is the only answer, love is the only answer. But that's my vision, that's not everybody's vision. But then what do I do when I see, as I'm walking down the street, a man going to kill another? Mm-hmm. Do I just stand by?
No.
I have to act. And I think one of the problems that I've heard here in the wording and the language that is used is that we think that we have to punish people. It's not like our whole philosophy of in Canada, theoretically at least, is not punishment.
No.
Punishment is not allowed to take part in court proceedings.
No.
It is protection of the public and isolating those who are dangerous. Unfortunately, we haven't figured out how to do it very well, because we let them out every few years to kill someone else, the very dangerous people. But the problem is that we have to isolate them. So you have to use at least a little bit of force to separate the parties, to take away the people who
exactly.
are causing the wars
exactly.
For their own personal
for sure.
interests.
Yeah. For sure.
But ultimately, nothing is going to happen until we raise the consciousness of the world. And that doesn't mean that large numbers of people have to have the consciousness raised.
Exactly.
It means that the leadership.
Exactly.
Right now we are seeing that happening. It's just that we are impatient.
Exactly.
It will happen over the next generation.
Exactly. Exactly.
Especially with the internet.
Exactly.
We have more and more democracies. We would get through the Islamic radicalism. They have to go through their.
Yeah, I believe in that.
If we don't fear death, what have we got to worry about?
Exactly. And what you said is right. I think the first person who started talking about environment issues didn't believe in him when he started. They thought that he was a crazy guy. How do you think that we will kill our fishes and these in the rivers? Nobody believed in him. And today, people, little by little, their conscience was informed, and it is becoming a reality for everybody. And I think what we said, our effort should be focused exactly on education. I believe necessarily in education. More you are educated, more you understand things, more you are able to help others to see links between things. And education, for me, our conscience should be helped in faith, in all levels of life.
Well, I think certainly, that's a difficult question that you've raised about, someone was asking Jim about that last night. I wasn't privy to his answer because someone else was talking to me. But, what do I do in a situation where, Darfur or any, not necessarily Africa, but any during the Hitler regime, even Bonhoeffer decided at some point.
Afghanistan.
Yeah. What? Like, how does that fit in with Merton's thought about?
But I think we need to explore. I don't think that Merton asked people to sit down and say and leave things as they are most of the time. I think when he was talking about freedom, if we discover, I give you an example. I said, with your children, we are violent, without knowing that we are violent. And children reflect what we did to them most of the time. But the more you become old, more you understand some things, and you change yourself. Most of the time, we are outside of ourselves. And according to Martin, for me, Martin was the guy who was walking to himself. And in walking to yourself, you understand better who you are. And in understanding very well who you are, you find the best thing, and you share them to others to improve who they are. And I remember there is a French philosopher, his name is Levinas, he was Jewish. He was a victim, he was young when the Second War happened, Emmanuel Levinas. And he wrote a book about totality and infinity. And he said, all human beings have what he calls metaphysical face. Metaphysical face is not your face. Your face are not metaphysical. Your face are rich face. You understand? I look at you, you have clothes, you have this, you have that. But metaphysical face, I give you an example. When you are driving, and you see someone with brakes, what happened to you when you are driving? Do you know that you see him so far? But when you see someone who doesn't have, it is brakes in your, where you are?
Breaches.
Yeah, when we have breaches, someone, all drivers see you. Do you know that? All drivers will stop. Mm-hmm. But they won't stop with a child with a crossing the road. Now, that is the difference. Metaphysical faith is discovered in the weakness of human beings, but not in a normal life. I was in a rehabilitation. I was dealing for 14 years with autistic children, with disabled people. I found a girl. I can't say her name, but this girl, she smiles. She doesn't do anything. You feed her, you do everything. She doesn't say anything to you, but she smiles. But her smile is mystical smile. You don't know what is passing in her body. Do you understand? And what I loved, imagine, I have PhD, I have mopping, I was mopping every day, moving, they vomited. I was doing those things every day. And the people look at me, they say, why is he doing those things? And I said to them, hey, guys, don't laugh at me. One day, you will need someone in your life. There are people who need help. And one day you won't be able to put on your clothes, and someone will help you. So you see, education is very, very important. But education only is not very, very sufficient. We need also faith. And faith can help us to go over what we see, to discover the spiritual roots of our action. And I think it is in the spiritual level that we can understand what Merton was saying about our peace or our freedom. And it is hard. It is not his way. We think that when he was talking about freedom or peace, it is small. It is not like that. It is very hard. You are sitting, someone is going with a bucket with water, he threw it on you. You are expecting for a conference. What do you do? Something is happening in your heart. You would like to. And if you are able to stand up and laugh and say, okay, I am happy. You gave me fresh water. I will go there. If they don't like to listen to me, I go there. If they don't like to listen to me because of what I will say, they will look at my clothes. That is the problem. If it happens to you at this level, it is a big challenge. First of all, in yourself. In yourself. Don't. And we have to understand that. Merton is not a guy who is preaching people, saying them, oh, it is easy. It is easy to be free. It is easy to have freedom. No. He's inviting us, guys, I invite you to fight. To fight against what can provoke war and other things. War against ourselves. While we are fighting against ourselves, that is a revelation now. I never understood that before coming here. And I understood that now. Do you understand? I told you, God is revealing us things at any time. Before coming, I didn't understand what I am sharing now with you. Fighting against ourselves to have peace.
Would you say that the Merton would not be opposed to, say, the Rwandan army that came and with violence?
No, I don't say that. I said, when you understand yourself, you will fight to stop those who would like to kill others. You will teach them to stop it. Yeah. Because when they do, they obey, they don't. And sometimes you have to stop that. Yeah. We have to do that. I think he was not in the level of fighting war bomb, but he helped us to understand the utility. What how may I translate?
Usefulness
of directing our energies to things which do not help people to grow. To become better. Why a guy like the president of North Korea is stupid. Why what he is doing is really stupid, because he is thinking that he is more powerful. He can impose himself to the rest of the world because he has something to keep. And the others, they are imposing also their will to others because they have guns. Do you understand? So, do you know why people are now, Russia and the American became together? Because they discovered at one moment that if they use their weapons, nothing will exist. And they try now to find peace. It didn't happen because they wanted to fight. No, they discovered the limits of their power. They were so powerful to raise the world in 1 second. And they say, no, we have to negotiate. We are crazy to do that. So Merton is at the beginning that people do not understand. They would have to understand that at the end. He said, think first, and your action will have excellent meaning if you understand that the beginning is the love, not the weapons. And to know that, it asks a big fighting in our body, in our heart.
One of the things that has attracted me to Merton, or the ideas, or what I've heard about him, is that he has been moving on a journey that I think many of us have moved on. And what he and others, it seems to me, have found is that in your attempt to find God, you have to listen to
the
spiritual teachers.
Exactly.
But there's a story of the Buddha speaking to his followers and saying, look, I tell you the truth, but don't believe what I say. Just follow the truth until you see it for yourself.
Exactly.
Then it becomes your truth.
Exactly.
And that truth is only inside.
Exactly.
There's only one person
yeah.
in the world that you can affect, that is yourself.
Exactly.
And then through that, it's sort of like I do the Sudoku puzzle.
Exactly.
And they're kind of interesting.
Exactly.
You do the Sudoku puzzle, and you get it right. I did this once, and I looked up the answer, and my answers were different. But my answers were right. I did it, I don't know why I did it, but the whole point of this is that when you get the puzzle right, you don't have to ask. I don't have to ask the Buddha. I don't have to ask God anymore. I know. Now, that knowingness is qualified, of course. It's not knowingness. It doesn't give me knowledge of everything. If I can't speak French, I can't speak French. And the knowingness is that the truth is not going to get me there. But I know the key thing is that love is the only answer. I mean, that's what we encapsulate everything. But how do you express that? Until we can't do anything about other people. All we can do is express like Merton did, I suspect, is by his existence, his writings, that there is an answer, and you can find it. And look, either Christ, Buddha, Merton, whoever, follow my path and you'll find it.
Thank you. I think you completed exactly what I wanted to say. I can't add anything.
Yes. I just wanted to comment on one of the gifts you've given us this morning. And in a way, I think we've all been saying sort of the same thing in the last 15 minutes. But one of the gifts you've given us is the gift of simplicity. I think one of the barriers for many of us in our spiritual journey that live in the West, especially if we're associated with academia, but generally, our Western culture really elevates the mind and the intellect and discourse. And you know, it's just intellect. It's
quiet.
And it can become ideas, philosophy, much argument about what should we do about transplantation, the ethics of transplantation, or genetics, or intervening in war, whatever. and becomes just a big stew pot of ideas
exactly.
and concepts.
Exactly.
And that's, and I think that's part of what I don't know, just expressing. You know, the essence is really simple. Like, and when you started, and you gave us your four principles. I don't know how many of us could do that. It also made me think, and the first principle, it made me think, and it's really in all traditions, like, I can't speak the Arabic very well, but, there is nothing but God. Everything is God. And from that, all else follows.
Right.
Which is not said easy.
Rationality is vital.
But that's one of the gifts you've given us this morning.
Thank you.
I mean, it's like it's like a drink from a clear spring.
Thank you.
There's a couple of other things, but maybe I'd use my airtime. The two of you were. I think you were asking. In essence, is war just is war or fighting back? Is fighting back ever justified? And some of the understandings I've come to, I'll put it in a metaphor. All life is sacred, so you should never kill any living thing if you don't have to. But if you don't fly because it's carrying a disease or a mite, you will have no consequences from that, no karma. None of the divine justice, this huge justice, which we don't get, is far bigger than we'll ever see. That's just part of the mechanism. And there are countries have karmas and groups have karmas, and sometimes they get into this human drama. I mean, that happened in World War II. And the consequences aren't there if you are fighting against evil in the same way, because you have to save the country. But it's something we won't understand until we're dead, I guess, or maybe there's the all-knowing at that time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I can't add anything to what you said. It's true, and many researchers found that rationality is a kind of violence, and violence directs sometimes against some group of people, against women, against the children, against things like that. And rationality is producing what we call modernity, what we call some other things. We have now computer, which is a fantastic thing, but when you are thinking to what will happen next, that is, and we can't stop that. And that is the reason why what he said about education, sometimes we are late, we face two bad things, and it takes time to wake up and say, hey, look at where we are. I tell you, I was there. Where I was working with Catholic Social Services, I was dealing with children. If you go to the court, you find many things as a game between lawyers and you can't understand. You don't think that those people really would like to stop crimes. It is money. Behind that, it is money. They come, they say, oh, they postpone. I will come next week. Children, they go in a youth center. They are in prison, but they are in contact with criminal people. So we need, as he said, our conscience should be educated, and at the same time, don't be tired. Continue to do what you can, if you can, and we'll spread Martin's vision of freedom and of peace and of love.
Any last words before we wrap up our session?
How lucky we all are to be here together this morning.
It's a holy place.
Yeah.
And you've given an eloquent thank you on behalf of all of us. So thank you for that. And thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.